Hey, good evening. Welcome again. श्री कार्तिक ब्रात की जय. सो ओरिजिनल प्लान वाज ऑल द मद्रास्तकम. नाउ वर मॉर्निंग मीटिंग बट यू वांट टू मेक गॉड लाफ, टेल हिम योर प्लान्स. कृष्ण हैड अ गुड मॉर्निंग लाफ एट अस ट्राइंग टू encompass the totality of Dhammadharashtaka, so we gladly embrace failure and we just did half of it. So somehow or other we will continue today in the evening, adjusting a little bit the schedule of some other events that we're planning to do today. Circle sharing tomorrow rather than today, and so on and so forth. So far we have try to say something about not only an introduction to Kartik, of course, its significance, but also we have navigated together the first four verses of Satyavrata Muni's Damodarashtakam, where he's praising, starting with Namami, as we say, putting everything else in context, in the context of offering pranam, special salutation to reality, and then starting to unfold the different details of the Damodar Lila, especially Yashoda abiding Krishna, though we know there is another Damodar Lila that we also mentioned. And ultimately, God being tied by the love of his devotees in itself a form of Damodar Lila. Our love project with Bhagavan is Damodar Lila. God being tied by the rope of affection and reciprocating accordingly. So anyhow, I won't go into a summary of the first four verses because I run the danger of having another lecture only on the first four verses, and I think we all glimpse enough how much we can draw from each one, not only of these verses, but each line, each word. There is so much content then, unlimited. So let's say we'll move to verse number five, our second half of the Sri Damodarastakam. But even when we finish today, if we do, you never know. Let's keep in mind the humbling reminder note, which is we are never finished with this. So we could rep give eternally speak about this or about anything forever. So we can recite all together the Sanskrit of the fifth verse. And of course, at the end of today's sharing, we will offer Gilam to Sri Sri Yashoda Damodar and present some prayer, present some the lamp of our heart with the oil of sincerity, trying to burn it in a sincere longing for the pleasure, trying to shed light on Sri Sri Yashoda Damodar, trying to see our divine with absolute more clearly through the light of bhakti, and gaining more awareness of how clearly we are being seen by the unconditional love of Bhagavan, darshan. इदं ते मोखं भोजं अत्यन्तनीलाय भृतां कुन्तलाय स्निग्धरक्तैश्च गोप्या मोहुश्चुम्बितां बिम्बरक्तादरं मे मनस्य वीरस्तमालं लक्षलाभै. Number five. Who wants to read? Maya Prasanna.
Your lotus-like face, encircled by soft blackish-blue curly locks of hair that have a reddish glow, is re repeatedly kissed by the gopi Sri Yashoda. May your lotus face, with lips like red bimba fruit, always remain manifest in my heart. I do not care about millions of other attainments.
The Brahma Muni ki jai. So somehow remember the last verse we studied before was him saying, I don't care for liberation, I don't care for anything, I only care for the vision of you as Bala Gopal. Somehow this fifth verse is an overflowing of the previous one, where he's like absorbed describing the details of Krishna's face. We now get to Krishna's face, that central lotus, how that's been kissed by Yashoda in Vatsalya Bhakti, and eventually he ends up saying, I don't care for millions of other attainments. This is the only portrait I want to hold in eternity in my heart. So here, Gopal's face is described as a lotus, not lotus face. All the different limbs of Krishna's body, you will find that they are described as lotus-like. Generally, we are more accustomed to hear the lotus feet, but here we have lotus face, and lotus navel, and lotus hands, and lotus everything. So the lotus, of course, is a symbol of beauty. You know, in the aesthetics of the Vedic traditions, lotus symbolizes beauty. Lotus is an object of meditation. So it implies each of these limbs, you can very naturally be absorbed in them. They are all of them, as we say today, they are the ornaments of their own ornaments. And also, very interestingly, lotus is, as Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh will say, no mud, no lotus. So, lotus is born from mud, no? And it rises above mud, it maintains its connection with the ground, the earth, but it grows above it in full beauty and blossom. So somehow the divine is fully present also in the material. It's omnipresent, no? In the mud of our existence, if you want to call it that way. But it's not limited there, trapped there, but blossoming in connection to it as well. So we again do not worship a God who is aloof, who is indifferent, who is apathetic, but someone who is deeply empathic, deeply tadatmik. So here Gopal's face is compared to a lotus flower in full bloom. I'll try to follow the analogy, you know. And interestingly, then comes the idea of his curly locks. Black curly locks as bumblebees who are like zzz, buzzing around the lotus flower. So his curly locks are like moving. You say in English, swing up
Swing.
to and fro, something with
Yeah.
unfro.
Swing. Swinging to whoever.
Okay.
Swing.
Huh? So in that
Swing.
way, compared with bumblebees, that are like, and again, all these are devotees, right? As we say before, the earrings are devotees. No, the earrings are not earrings, are devotees. Serving Krishna, assisting him, kissing his cheeks. So here we're having the curly locks moving in a way that they resemble bumblebees around the lotus flowers of Krishna's face. Sometimes the analogy is given by our acharyas that again, the devotee is like a bumblebee, saragrahi, like a nectar pollen drinker, tavern person, taking pollen, taking nectar, and becoming intoxicated. That's that I remember in Ananda Dham, we were giving a lecture some weeks ago or months ago, and next to me was a flower, like a big sunflower, and there was a bumblebee. And the bumblebee was like fully drunk. Like coming and going, and you could see that it was like topsy-turvy, they say in English. Like, ooh. But going for another drink and another drink, no? Going, and he was not leaving the tavern, right? Continue to drink the pollen. So sometimes this example is given, right? The devotee is like that. Krishna is like a lotus, his heart, his face, and the devotee enters and starts to up, like a bumblebee starts to drink the nectar of that particular lotus, whether it's the face, whether it's the feet, whether it's whatever, and becomes intoxicated by that. And at one point, the night comes and the lotus closes, and the bumblebee becomes trapped there forever. And of course, Krishna reciprocates accordingly, and sometimes the same example is given the other way around. And Krishna sees the devotee's heart, the devotee's face, and like a lotus, and Krishna is the bumblebee. Indeed, one many names of Krishna are the bumblebee. You have the whole Brahma Gita, the song of a bumblebee. Many acharyas comment that the actual bumblebee is Krishna himself appearing there. So Krishna is a bumblebee exploring the lotus of the devotee's heart, and the lotus at one point closes, and Krishna is trapped there forever. So all the things that we can say in how the devotee reacts toward Krishna, we can apply those same things and have, say how Krishna reacts to a devotee. And at one point, the prayers that the devotee offers to Krishna, at one point, he may be offering the same prayers to the devotee. At one point, you cannot tell the difference who is offering prayers to whom. the line becomes blurred because the object of worship becomes a worshipper. Krishna says, as you worship me, as you adore me, I adore you. As we shared before today, early, the six verses from the ninth canto of the Bhagavad, and the last one, Krishna saying, I am in the heart of my devotee is in my heart. They do not know nothing apart from me, I do know nothing apart from them. Again, both are drunk, trapped in the lotus of each other like an intoxicated bumblebee. So here we have that analogy, no? The author is like very, in a very absorbed way, he's studying the lotus face of Krishna, encircled by this blackish blue curly locks, bumblebee-like, with a gray, reddish glow. Again, it's a very detailed, you have to pay attention to detail. You know, sometimes people say the devil is in the details, but here we will say the divine is in the details. And then he goes, how Yashoda is repeatedly kissing that lotus face. So I can relate to that. I can think to my mom when I was I'm only child. May not compare myself to Krishna just in case. Vatsalya. I mean, in this world you can get a glimpse of what's a Vatsalya. I've heard, I remember talking to so many devotees about asking many of them, okay, what's your okay, you've recently had a child. So what's your experience? What has changed? How that has transformed your life? And many of them tell me, like, now I understand more the love of Yashoda for Krishna, the love of Nanda Maharaj. Now it makes more sense. And my baby somehow is getting giving me glimpses and hints of Krishna. I can connect more. So that was it. That's the idea. It's possible. So I can think of my mom when I was a child, not even when I was a child, when Swami Padmanabha is 45 years old. And mom just want to kiss repeatedly the face of her baby, her 40-year-old baby. I say, Mom, I'm Maharaj now. My mom will say, but Krishna is God himself and he accepts being repeatedly kissed. So I'm defeated in argument. So also some interesting thing that Sanatana Goswami mentions in regards to this verse, of course, apart from all that we hear here, actually the verse doesn't say Yashoda in the Sanskrit, it says Gopya. So Gopya means the Gopi, which of course we are talking about Yashoda, so you can apply that in the context of the narrative and Yashoda is repeatedly kissing Krishna in Vatsalya Bhav. There's no problem at all. But also Sanatana Goswami says it can also refer to Sri Radha. No. But again, very indirectly, she starts to appear about this other gopi, this other type of kissing, Vatsalya Rasa, Madhurya Rasa. So indirectly, Radha starts to manifest in the month of Kartik. Again, Yashoda Damodar, but Radha Damodar is also there. And as we say here, the author says, may that always remain manifest in my heart. May that image always remain manifest in my heart. I don't care for millions of other attainments. So that's a very interesting notion of when Krishna says in the Gita, Vyabhyasayat Mikavudi Ekiha Kuranandana. My devotees have one-pointed determination. My great devotees are like at one point absorbed in a direction, and everything else basically stops existing, apart from the object of their fascination. When you become fascinated by something, nothing else exists. Or everything else exists, speaking about that something else. Like the gopis will say, when we are in union with Krishna, we see one Krishna. When we are in separation from Krishna, everything becomes Krishna. We see millions of Krishnas. In the tree, in the atom, in the wall, in the lamp, everything becomes Krishna. That's an interesting prayer. Okay, verse number six. Namo Deva Damodaranantha Vishnu Prasita Prabhudukajalabdhimagnam Kripadrishtibhrishtyatidinambatanu Grihanishtamamajnapetyakshidrishya. Mandavikram, can you read in English?
O Deva, O Damodar, O Ananta, O Vishnu, obeisances unto you. O Prabhu, be pleased with me. I'm drowning in an ocean of miseries. Alas, I'm most afflicted and do not know what to do. O Isha, shower me with your merciful glance and kindly uplift me by becoming directly visible to my eyes.
And so there are a few interesting things to mention here. Of course, it starts with the whole parade of names, no? Through which the author is addressing Krishna, and again uses the word namo. Although we say in the beginning it started with namami, and we'll say, okay, that's enough. That puts in context everything else, yes, but in between he cannot resist by again saying namo, namaha, namaste. I offer myself to you. So again, the name Deva comes. Remember, it appeared in the previous verse. What Deva meant, you remember?
Right.
No, Deva means he who plays. It's connected, yeah. Playful, the playful one. So Namo Deva, Damodar. Now the word Damodar appears. So he who is tied in the belly. Basically, that's what Damodar means. Ananta and Vishnu. So Ananta means without end. Anta or Antya means end. Ananta means no end. And Vishnu means all pervading. So again, now comes some Aishwarya into the picture, if you will. You have no beginning, no end. You're all pervading, omnipresent. But Deva first, you are playful, right? Again, bringing this to things in creative tension put together. No? You're the playful God, but at the same time has no beginning and it's unlimited. But still, and you are kissed over and over again by Yashoda and so on and so forth, right? So another way of saying this is Vishnu means all pervading, and all pervading means your grace is all pervading. Your grace is everywhere. But I'm not seeing it. That's kind of the implication, how the rest of the verse, the tone of the rest of the verse comes. It's more like a prayer for mercy, for relief, as we will see, and we will clarify in which sense. Again, the choice of names is not like coincidence. Okay, let's just consider Sanskrit meter and what's fitting in. Okay, let's put that name. No, it's like there's some purpose there. So again, you have no beginning, no end, you are everywhere, you're all pervading. Therefore, your grace is all pervading because you are made of grace. But I'm not perceiving that. It's not your fault. It's just your grace is omnipresent. As I like to say, I'm omniabsent. Right? Your grace is everywhere and I'm nowhere. Who knows where I'm looking for? So it's a type of humility that comes here, which is very classical in many of these prayers. There's always some birth for dainya. Dainya, like a plague for further grace, to perceive the grace that is already there. Now, of expressing my helplessness, no, the form of acknowledging also my responsibility in not being able to grasp what I know is there. So now the question is, because then the rest of the verse seems to sound like the author is saying, okay, I'm drowning in an ocean of misery. Please save me, relieve me from that. I'm afflicted. So it sounds like, oh, he wants moksha, right? He wants freedom from suffering, freedom from samsara. But he already rejected that a few verses ago. He said, I don't care for any of that. So what, now he repented and he went back to, no, give me moksha. Yeah, I thought it about twice and give me liberation from the repeated cycle of birth. No. He's fixed in his ideal. So, which are the miseries, the affliction that he's experienced is basically the separation from the beloved. Like when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the fourth chapter in verse 8, Paritranaya Sadunam. I come to protect my devotees. He's speaking about avatar tattva, he's descending to the world. I come to protect my devotees. And one could argue, but Krishna doesn't need to come to protect his devotees. He can protect them in so many ways. But the authors, the acharyas, the commentators will say, well, he's coming to protect the devotees from themselves, basically, because his devotees are dying in separation of him, and they won't be satisfied by any like more general arrangement that Krishna could make to protect them. But they want him showing himself to them directly, sakshat darshan, direct darshan. So when Krishna say, I come to protect my devotees, I came to save them from the agony of separation from me. They reach a point where they can no longer live without me appearing to their lives. So this is kind of the spirit of this prayer, with Satyabrata Muni saying, I'm drowning in an ocean of misery. Now, he's not speaking about self, the consequences of being self-centered and illusion. I'm most afflicted. I don't know what to do. Again, this we could say the same from our place, but he's saying the same, using the same words to refer to something very different. Because remember, again, he already said, I don't care for liberation. So we have to understand that in the context of the bigger picture. And also something that we could say, and the next verse we will say that he again says, I don't care for liberation. Just in case we thought, oh, he repented, right? And now he's going back to ask for emancipation from samsara. Next verse we'll say, I don't care for liberation. Na mokshi grahomesti damodare. Na mokshi. Moksha, no, thank you. And he said, moksha, no, thank you before. So if in between he's saying something that resembles a word moksha, it has to be read differently. And something that also I referred to in my book, which we are trying to connect with in some way, is that this type of prayer also can come from this genuine humility born out of, how to say, the insatiable thirst that comes when one loves. When you really love God, you never feel it's enough. You never feel it's I'm done. I'm
satiated.
satiated.
Yes.
Wow, interesting. Right. So prem, love is ever evolving. So it's always expanding. So even if you have love is always advancing. So there's more love to have, to offer, to honor. So prayers like that can be understood from that context. It's not like, oh, poor he doesn't have love, he's praying for grace and love. No. Probably that confirms how full that person is with that. So we always quote Sri Chaitanya Dev, the very embodiment of divine love, and he says, in me there is not even the aroma of love. And he is the form of love. So that's the paradox again. He's filled with love and he feels I don't have any of that. This is beautiful section in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Maybe you remember that. I told that a few times. Narada Muni comes to Krishna and asks a very peculiar blessing. He asks Krishna, because Narada Muni is in a very ecstatic mood, experiencing the glory of love, the ever expansiveness of love. This has no end. There's such a sweet taste in never having enough love. You can always have more. This is such a beautiful thing. Hopefully nobody becomes complacent in love. Hopefully nobody thinks, I have love, game over, I'm done. What's the next business? There's no next business. So once Narada Muni in that ecstasy, he goes to Krishna and begs for a blessing. So Krishna says, of course, you're Narada Muni, you're asking a blessing. How can I say no? What's the blessing you want? So Narada Muni say, may no one be ever satisfied with your love. Peculiar blessing, right? You generally don't approach God asking that. May nobody ever feels that they have had enough, basically. Because if they feel so, it's some form of self-deception. At the moment, they feel that they are losing sight of what's the real nature of love. So may nobody ever feel they have had enough of your love, so they can continue pursuing newer levels, newer degrees. So that's a very unusual request. And of course, Krishna replies, even in a more unusual way, because he say, "What's that question? What's that blessing you're asking?" And we may think, "Oh, Krishna will criticize the request because it's nonsense, because it's whatever." And Krishna said, "No, it's nonsense because that's already happening. Say, you Narada Muni, you travel all over the universe. You see my devotees. They are never satisfied with my love. They always want more. They always can have more. So why you are requesting something that is already fulfilled? Please ask for a blessing that is more realistic." Because the nature of love is such that it can always grow. And that keeps the lover in a very humble state. Because you can never take for granted, okay, now I love, now I have it. It's like humility. No? Love and humility are cause and effect of each other, Sanatana Goswami says. The more love you have, the more humble you become. The more humble you become, the more love you have. So if you have humility, but you say, I have humility, that immediately evaporates, right? If you're humble, but suddenly you're like, oh yeah, I'm so humble. It's like, gone. Sorry, but gone. That's how your humility operates. So with love is similar in one sense. If I how to say, there's a word that is not coming in English, not assess, but like assert. If I assert myself, have this amount of love, probably I'm losing sight of all the love that's still waiting for me on the other side of the horizon. So someone who is really busy loving, they don't even have time to measure how much love they have or not have. They are busy loving. And since you can always love more, they're always concerned with that. So they've never had time to stop and say, oh, I have so much love. Right? There's so much more love to be honored. So I'm just busy with that. And that's the nature of love. So anyhow, prayers like this in verse 6 can come from that spirit also. A genuine humility coming from that place. Not humility, as we always said, humility shouldn't take us to feel less or miserable or bad. It's just experience that comes when you are confronted with something that is vast and big and beautiful and undeserved at the end of the day. So it's humbling to know, okay, I don't know, I'm loved unconditionally by Krishna. I did nothing to deserve that, and that's coming. Well, that's humbling. Okay, verse 7. I'm trying to be a little bit more dynamic. The morning we are a little bit more, there's more action. Now it's natural we need a little bit something more light in the evening. Verse number 7, penultimate verse of Damodarashtra. Kuberatma jo bhakti Namo kshegramo mesti damodareha. Are you ready? Asking those who are close to the computer so the voice can be recorded.
Just as you freed the two sons of Kuvera, even while bound around the belly, and made them recipients of devotion, similarly, please bestow upon me profuse prema bhakti to you in your form as a little cowherd boy. O Damodara, I long for this alone. I do not want any other kind of liberation.
Yeah. So now we have another part of the Damodar Lila that is basically what happens at the end. As we know, we just show this tying Krishna to a mortar, but the mortar is lying between two trees, sometimes called the Jamalarjuna trees. which actually in the previous life were the sons of Kuvera, that's described in the Bhagavatam as well. And as the son of Kuvera, they were in the heavenly planets. There were two Gandharvas, these very beautiful artistic beings, but somehow became intoxicated, not out of, not in the tavern of divine love precisely, but in a way that led them to basically insult someone like Narad Muni. So, short, long story short, Narad Muni curses them. But again, we can say with Narad Muni, I thought you were devotee, merciful, why you're cursing people. But the curse became a blessing. So they were cursed to be born as to trees. They were standing naked, intoxicated, and anyhow, long story short, Narad Muni cursed be born as trees. But in Vrindavan, during the time Krishna is performing his Leela on earth, and when Krishna at one point he moves the mortar, he uproots the two trees, basically. And these two souls that were inside of these trees become not only liberated, as the verse says, it says, you have bestowed them, they have become recipients of devotion. So he didn't merely give, and Krishna didn't merely give them moksha, mukti, but prem, divine love. So in the same way, the author again makes the point, similarly, as you have given them prem, give me prem. Please. And again, probably he has prem, but who he has prem wants more prem. The tavern never closed. Give me more prem.
Okay.
So that's a very interesting idea because, in one sense, Krishna was tied still to the mortar, and these two sons of Kuvera were tied to the conditions of being a tree, so to say. But in his tied condition, Krishna liberated the tithing of, or tithing, or the entanglement of these other two souls. And again, not only giving them moksha, freedom from samsara, but prem. Samsara, Jiva Goswami explains. Samsara on one side means repeated cycle of birth and death, but samsara, sara means essence, and sam means full. So Krishna gave them samsara. Gave them the full essence, divine love, right? So again, it seemed like a curse, not what Narada Muni said the other day. We were talking about chastisement, how chastisement, if it's happening in the context of love, or if we want to talk about tough love, it's always, at the end of the day, a blessing, a hidden blessing. So in this case, Narada Muni could have been seen as showing tough love to the sons of Kuvera, cursing them, be born as a tree. Of how tough. Right? But again, see the bigger picture, which type of trees, in which place, in which moment, what happened eventually to those trees. So these sections of the Bhagavatam, and there are many of them, try to teach us what seems to be in many cases as a curse, or what we perceive as such, is actually a blessing waiting to be discovered by us. Again, Govardhan Lila, as we referred today in the morning. One point of the Govardhan Lila is Indra shedding all this downpour, torrential downpour, which almost seems like a scene of the apocalypse or something, the end of the world. The whole village about to be killed and drowning. The worst thing that can possibly happen. And somehow, in one moment, the whole scene reverses. And everyone is having uninterrupted darshan of Krishna for 7 days. Wow, the best possible thing that could possibly happen. So, the worst possible thing, the best possible thing, what happened in between for moving to one place to another? Well, the Brajavasis sincerely surrendered to Krishna, asked for shelter. And as I like to say, they didn't put conditions on how Krishna should give them shelter. They say, Krishna, please give us shelter. They didn't say, do it like this, do it like that. It has to come in this packaging, please. Say, give us our shelter. And Krishna did the unthinkable. He just picked a whole hill like a mushroom and converted it in a giant umbrella. Nobody would have thought about it. Probably even not Krishna at the moment was like, oh, this can work. No, soon. And then suddenly everyone, all Vrindavan is below the hill, seeing Krishna nonstop. for a week. That never happens in any other lila. In any other lila, Krishna goes, disappears, union, separation, goes to herd the cows, go with the gopis, goes with the gopas, goes here. It's not 24/7 with all of the Brajavasis. But this happens during this week. No, unblinking darshan. From the worst to the best. So it was a blessing on its way. So this is a similar case. So the author is saying again, Satyabrata Muni is concluding in the same way that you were so generous by giving prem to these two personalities. Give that to me, please. Prem, what's the expression? Prayacha. Yeah, prema bhaktin swakamme prayacha. Prem prayacha. I went to another prayer to Gopeshwar Mahadev, who says, prem prayacha nirupadi namo namaste. Prem prayacha. So prem prayacha means basically prayacha. Prayacha means like give, bestow, and pra means like in the most lavish way. No, that's how Sanatana Goswami explained it. No. Please bestow such love unto me in the most lavish way. No. Again, this speaks about the insatiable thirst of love. Probably if one is praying like that, means that person has love already. And they are growing desperate, desperate for more, more, more. But again, try to understand the spirit of this. They are not just give me love like a thing that I take and I consume for my own selfish, self-centered satisfaction. Oh, how nice this love, give me more love. And it's like a supermarket product that I take for me. No? When the great souls ask for love, again, that love is always to be expressed in relationship. So it's never an isolated attainment. Oh, thank you for this love. I will go to my room and enjoy it privately. It's not possible. If you do that, then that's not love by definition. No? If it's an isolated, alienated experience that nobody else is experiencing through you, then that cannot be named love. So when they're asking for love, again, that's not something to me, for me only. Because me, I exist in relationship. No, I'm not an isolated figure. So an enlightened soul knows that and prays for love to become a vessel of that love that comes through that person to everything and everyone. Let's go to verse 8.
Namaste stu priyaya. Namo Nandalilaya Devaya Tubhyam.
Tirasna, can you read, please?
O Damodar, I offer pranam to the rope binding your belly, for it is an abode of brilliant effulgence. I offer pranam to your belly, which is the mainstay of the entire universe. I offer pranam again and again to Srimati Radhika, your most beloved, and I offer pranam to you, my divine lord, who performed unlimited transcendental pastimes.
Oh, ready, boy. So again, this verse starts with namaste. No, again, it's not enough to say namami at the beginning. The beginning, at the end, in between, in all directions, like Arjuna is praying in chapter 11 of the Gita, right? When he says to Krishna, I offer my obeisances to you in front, behind, on top, to left, to right, in every direction. It's like my whole being to you. So this is a kind of as the first verse of Damodarashtakam kind of encapsulating the whole lila, like an introduction, a trailer to what's coming. This last verse somehow summarizes some of the content of the lila, since we are reaching the conclusion by offering obeisances and respects to different crucial paraphernalia of the lila. That's interesting because this verse, the author starts offering his most heartful pranam to a rope and then to a belly. Right? Generally, we don't offer pranam to anyone's belly. To a rope. Generally, a rope is just it's a rope, right? But first to the rope. The rope is so crucial. The rope that was always two fingers too short. The paradoxical rope, because no matter how much rope you added, still was two fingers too short. Again, the math doesn't work anymore. Another point that we were talking the other day. It cannot be calculated in the usual way we measure things. So it starts with the rope. Again, rope is something that most of us will consider insignificant. Just rope. Well, there's rope there in the shed, in the house. Whenever I need, I pick the rope when I finish. But here we are talking about a world made of consciousness, a more world made of love, bhava. Everything is an expression of a particular ecstatic emotion, even the rope. So the rope is made of love. Siddhar Maharaj will speak about planets of faith. Oh, that's a very beautiful way of putting it. You generally don't think about a planet being made of faith. Everything is made of earth and water and this and that and these minerals and these ingredients and gas and this. But a planet made of faith? A rope made of faith? A rope made of love? Yes. So in that realm, even the most insignificant element is worthy of our highest reverence. Vaikuntha prithiviyadi sakala chinmay, says Chaitanya Charitamrita. From Vaikuntha upwards, even the soil is transcendental conscious substance worthy of worship. One speck of dust, what to speak, a rope. And that partic this particular rope. And of course, at the end of the day, we could also say more figuratively, the actual rope was Yashoda's bhakti. That's what actually tied Krishna, and we offer pranam to that. And that's totally fine. That's a way to understand this verse in that way. But also, you can also take the more literal reading. I offer pranam to the rope because that's not ordinary rope. Whatever is paraphernalia in the service of Krishna is to be venerated. That's called tadiya seva. To serve those things that are dedicated to the service of Krishna. Like the famous lila, which is connected to the Damodar lila, of course, when Yashoda is boiling the milk. That's I didn't mention that, but that's all. Again, there are many lilas in the lila. Before that was this seeing of the universal form inside of Krishna. Next, Yashoda is boiling the milk for Krishna, and Krishna is like, "Mom, I'm hungry. I want to be breastfed." And she's like, "Wait a minute! I'm preparing this milk to prepare some things for you." And Krishna becomes impatient. And Yashoda goes, but then the milk starts to boil over, and she puts Krishna on the side to attend the milk.
Oh.
She has Krishna on her lap, but she decides to pick the milk. And it's like, do you value milk more than your son? No, that's not how it's like Yashoda's psychology operates. It's like this milk is paraphernalia in the service of Krishna. This for Krishna. So I'm not leaving Krishna's. She's serving Krishna by breastfeeding him, but by attending the meal, she's continuing to serve Krishna in another way. Of course, Krishna didn't like that. He appreciated the point, but he saw that like, oh, this is a good entry point to create another lila, to go somewhere else. So he then starts to be mischievous, steals the butter, breaks the pots, gives to the monkey, then Yashoda starts to run after him and so on. Then we have the whole Damodar Lila, which again concludes not only him being tied, but giving prem to the two sons of Kubera. So many things are accomplished in one Lila. Now, that's something that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita. With one action, Bhagavan accomplishes multiple tasks. No. Sometimes we, with multiple tasks, accomplish nothing. Right? In our multitasking culture, sometimes, right? We do many things, but we do not do any of them deeply present. Like it's just I don't know about Maharaj. I'm chanting japa while responding my emails and seeing the news and doing something with my feet or whatever, no? Yeah, but Krishna, that's one thing, and he's expanding prem in every direction. In him, in Yashoda, in inhabitants of Braj, witnessing that, in the monkeys who are being fed, in the milk, and in the sounds of Kubera. In every direction, everyone is being fed prem, right? And the rope is no exception to that. So we start there. No. Even the most insignificant, quote unquote, element, a rope, is utterly glorious in the realm of love. Everything is paraphernalia of love. It's an extension of love. So he starts with the rope. Then he offered pranam, again, another unusual pranam. I offer my prostrated obeisances to a rope. That's unusual if we don't understand it properly. Then I offer my prostrated pranam to a belly. Oh, that's unusual. Right. Generally, we fall at the feet of someone, not at the belly of someone. Right? But that's, of course, this whole lila revolves around a rope and a belly. No? If you don't have a rope and a belly, you don't have Damodar. No? That name no longer exists. That form of the divine no longer exists. And Sanatana Goswami, he in the commentary, of course, he brings some Aishwarya into the picture. Again, Aishwarya and Madhurya have always to be kept in context. Of course, for the Brajavasi in the Leela, Aishwarya is there, but they do not see it at all. They are immersed in a pool of Madhurya. But for us as sadhakas, we need to properly integrate and balance the two. No? Not too much Madhurya, too much simply intimacy, we may lose sight of what's actually taking place. And too much Aishwarya may become a little bit too like tremendous. No? So we need some sweetness to balance that. So he's referring to the belly of Krishna, but referring to the belly of Krishna's in his form as Vishnu, in which a lotus navel is coming, from which Brahma comes, and from Brahma comes the whole material creation. So in one sense, that belly is the source of the whole cosmos, right? So he makes that point. That belly is the whole of the whole cosmos, and Yashoda is tying that belly, is like capturing that. That lotus flower in which Brahma is born somehow sustains the 14 planetary systems. Pretty Aishwaric. As we say before, right? Krishna showed the Bishwaroop to Yashoda when he opened his mouth. He showed universal, all the universe inside himself. So all connected to his body, to his belly. One name for Krishna having his, again, we talk about the lotus face of Krishna. And if we want to say lotus belly, we will say Padmanabha, basically, right? Not as lotus. Now I'm realizing I was so in. I mean, I'm not realizing that that's the meaning of Padmanabha. I'm realizing that Damodar Lila was so, how to say, instrumental in me being here and eventually becoming Padmanabha's family. And now, yeah, here this also mentioned to Padmanabha, which of course can mean many things. You can understand Padmanabha or lotus navel. Like again, from that navel, from that belly, the lotus came, in which Brahma was sitting, and so on and so forth. More related to Vishnu aspect. Also, we can refer it to Krishna, as we say before. All his limbs are lotus-like: lotus feet, lotus navel, lotus feet, lotus mouth, symbol of beauty. Connected to the earth, the mud blossoming above, human-like mud, quote-unquote, fully divine blossom. And also another meaning, more even more confidential, of Padmanabha, would say it's like a little bit more confidential, but briefly I mention it, which is when after their amorous battle, Radha and Krishna, Sri Radha is resting her head after the battle, resting her head on Krishna's navel. So her face is lotus-like. So there is a lotus in the navel, no? In Krishna's navel. Also, that's also another way of understanding Padmanabha. So since we mentioned Radha, let's go to her mention here. Finally, Satyavrata Muni invokes her name more directly. Namo Radhikaya Tvadiya Priyaya. One line, it's enough. One line, as we say the other day, the whole Bhagavatam revolves around Sri Radha. She's never mentioned even once directly. But it's okay, enough. Her indirect presence is enough for a whole book like the Bhagavatam to revolve around her. So in the same way here, we have all this, what, 32 lines. One line, she's mentioned, Namo Radhikaya, no? Pranam to Sri Radhika, Sri Radha. Tvadiya Priyaya. Tvadiya Priyaya could mean a few things. One of those is, you who are very loved to Krishna. That's one idea, Sanatana Goswami says. And of course, Radhika, the name Radha comes from Aradhana. Sanatana Goswami also explains that in the purport. Aradhana means to worship. But in this case, not to worship in a formal, distant way, you know, like I'm worshiping, and Radha doesn't worship Krishna like that. But actually, how she worships Krishna, how she loves Krishna, shows the ultimate meaning of the term worship. So what it means to worship in every sense of the word, you can see that in Radha. For those of us who may be still a little bit, how to say, attached to a type of worship with this more like reverential and distant and fearful, okay, we have to begin somewhere. It's fine. Mudra obsessed, no, as we were talking the other day. But Sri Radha is worshipping the Aradhana. Her way of worshipping is very different, very unique. So, Tvadiya Priyaya. Priya means beloved. So, one idea is Sri Radha is Krishna's eternal beloved. Or it can mean Radha is your beloved or you are Radha's beloved. I mean, of course, it's always reciprocal. But Sanatana Goswami makes that point. It can mean both how much you are in love with her, how much she is in love with you. We will choose both and here, not either or. And then we reach to the last line, which is very interesting. Conclude, Namo Ananta Lilaya Devaya Tubhyam. Again, Deva. The word Deva appears a lot in Damodarasaka. Devaya. So I offer pranam. Again, Namo, Namo. All these verses about Namaste. Namo Ananta Liya, Namo Radhikaya, Namaste Studabne. Now, at the end, the author feels like called to just give himself fully to that. So Namo Ananta Lilaya, I offer my pranam, my life, to your unlimited lilas, Ananta Lila, Devaya Tubhyam. O Deva, again, O who are playful, I offer pranam to your unlimited pastimes. So Sanatana Goswami, he concludes his Dik Darshini Tika, his commentary on the Damodarashtakam. I will read what he says. He says, finally, at the conclusion of the prayer, the author desires to describe the supreme super excellence of the Rasa Lila. He just mentioned Sri Radha, so now it's like, okay, what follows naturally? So he wants to mention the supreme super excellence of the Rasa Lila and other divine pastimes that Krishna performed with Sri Radha. But since these are the topmost of confidential topics, they are not mentioned directly. We were talking the other day. This is Sanatana Goswami speaking this. So he himself is agreeing that certain things are to be spoken indirectly, in a suggested way. Those who have the ears to hear, they will get that. And they will relish how they are spoken in that way. And then he says, the logic is madurena samapayat. This is a famous line, many traditions in India. Madurena samapayat, which means we should end with something sweet. No. Sometimes it may be applied to eating literally, but many times it's applied to a prayer, a composition. Let's end on a sweet spot, on a sweet note. No. So all undertakings should be completed in a sweet manner. Sanatana Goswami says. So that applies here. Therefore, such confidential pastimes are referred to only by a mere dint, as they are offered obeisance, obeisances with the word Namo Ananta Lilaya. So that's interesting, right? Because he says, let's end with something sweet. And you may think, okay, something sweet, he will speak openly about the Rasa Lila. No, the sweetness is that he speaks about indirectly. That's even more sweet. Right? It gives more pleasure to these particular topics. Again, we are talking about here Radha Damodar. No? The whole song was about Yashoda Damodar, Krishna type by Yashoda and Vatsalya Bhakti. The last two lines are Radha Damodar, no? Krishna type by Radha in romantic love. But that's something very confidential. And romantic love in particular is characterized by indirect speech, by things that are said in a way that only the lovers can understand. For everyone else, they will think, oh, they're talking about this. But all the lovers, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about someone else, something else. And nobody else is getting that. So that makes the whole thing especially sweet, right? It's confidential. So Sanatana Goswami mentions that at the end. Let's end this with something sweet. Let's keep this confidential. It's interesting, paradoxical thinking. Again, we may think, oh, let's something let's expose and explain the whole thing openly in detail. That's not sweet. No? Because who is able to honor that properly? Who has the adhikar to know what to do with that? So let's mention that indirectly, in between the lines. Those who have the capacity, they will be able to mine no? the treasures from there. And again, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, Parokshan Mama Chapriyam. He says, I'm very fond of indirect speech. Krishna says, I really like when things are said indirectly. I'm fond of crooked speech. When things are not like straight, but it's like, he is crooked, right? He's bent in three banga. No? Krishna says, bent in every possible way. Love is moves in a zigzag way, as we say. And Krishna's love, so he himself moves in a zigzag way. To say even that he's so crooked and so zigzagzy, yeah, that when Yashoda was running after him, Krishna didn't run in a straight line. He was running like in a zigzag always, no? Because everything he does is crooked. How he speaks, how he dances, how he thinks. Not crooked in a bad way, because crooked can have a negative connotation, right, in English? But it's like just, you know, unpredictable, moving this way. So he appreciates when things are not like straight and there's no mystery. There's no thing to unveil. There's nothing between the lines. This is it. So boring.
There's no play.
There's no play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It becomes formality. It becomes so. Paroksha mama chapriya. And the Bhagavatam say, paroksha vada rishaya. Paroksha mama chapri. And the sages, the rishis, paroksha vada. Their vada, their speech is indirect. Why paroksha vada risha? Because paroksha mama chapri. Because I love indirect speech. It's not that the rishis, the sages are like, they have a problem. They are speaking that way because I love that. That's how it works. That's how both my lovers and me operate. The world of love operates in that language. So that's the end of Damodar Astaga. With that note of mystery, that's the end, quote unquote. No? With that note of mystery, Shirada, Ananta Lila, of obeisances to unlimited Lilas. Unlimited. Which ones? Unlimited Lilas. Mm. Those who have the eyes to see will see. Those who have the eyes, ears to hear will hear. Okay. So, before doing Damodar Astakam, let's do a little sharing in groups. Why not? You were not expecting. I was not expecting that either. We are talking about being crooked. So now you have to share with each other in as crookedly as you can without telling anything directly. Now that's not the excess. We'll make again groups of three, and you will be invited just to share with each other for 2-3 minutes each. Which have been the the things that mostly touch you during these two classes we have today about the Damodar Ashtakam, and why some of the things we've shared were relevant to you in particular. So I will pause. So I hope you had a good sharing. It was a good symptom. We were saying that I played the bowl at the end. Nobody cared for the bowl. You didn't listen anything. You were like, no, 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 no. It's like, ting, 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 da, 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 da. So we're like, great. They're absorbed. That's how it works. We may need to upgrade the instruments to take out you out of the absorption. Yeah, that reminds me, there's Sanatana Goswami comments that when Sukadev Goswami was speaking the Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, that sometimes he will just pass out, tavern, enter into trance, that he had a whole array of musicians next to him to do kirtan, to wake him up from the trance. Sometimes we use kirtan to enter into trance, but he needed the kirtan to be brought back and be in and out. So it sounds similar. Like I'm trying, you're absorbed into your own trance. So thank you so much for sharing. I hope it was some highlight you may like to share briefly of the conversation. So, because I was not participating, don't be miser. Share a jewel or two with me. I don't need everyone. That's just something.
Yeah, I mentioned something really interesting that translating the songs actually so you can speak them in your own language, and apparently that's
not to sing it, to be like a lyric in the rhyme.
Oh yeah, so, yeah.
You said in
yeah,
melodies.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I mean, I don't have time to do that in English, but in Spanish, in my times in Argentina, we have all the songbook translated into Spanish with the same rhyme, so you can sing it in the same melody you will sing in the original. And it, yeah, for many it helps, especially if you don't know Sanskrit or Bengali, it's more relatable in terms of conveying your feeling. So I live in that in the air if someone feels inspired to. Something else?
One point was about, because at the end, you know, after singing Damodara Ashtakam for many years, at the end we always sing Jaya Radha Damodara. We never sing Jaya Yashoda Damodara. So like, well, what's all that about? You know, I know it's the month of Mati Radharani, but you know, it's not the month of Radha Damodara, it's the month of Shrimati Radharani, but we sing Jaya Radha Damodara. So when you brought in how it's speaking so secretly about Shrimati Radharani and how you know, the sweetness is put right at the end in that beautiful secret love code. That's really lovely how that was brought out. I really got something from that.
Sri Radha Damodar ki jai. Okay, so we'll put the sharing to rest. May you have a very blessed month of Kartik, that today is beginning. Hopefully we have a very nice momentum gain all together today here, so we can have a very beautiful, blissful, deep, touching experience. And we will have still almost a week of the first week of Kartik will be here all together, so that will be very interesting. And tomorrow we'll continue with the more quote unquote standard sharing around themes of evolution in divine love. So tomorrow I'm thinking about exploring some topics connected to the soul. Soul's ever-evolving potential, but also ever-devolving potential. Some note, caution there. And in that connection, sharing some thoughts about suffering, pain, like warming up for the next day, where Bhakti Rasa will be sharing with us our grief exploration, which all together we'll be engaging in. But next, we'll sing Sri Damodar Ashtakam. After having had hopefully some glimpse of what Damodar Ashtakam is about, we will be invited not only to sing the song, but of course also to light the lamp, which in most Gaudiya Vaishnava lineages, that's part of how on a daily basis Kartik is celebrated. So lighting this lamp, as I said, representing the flame of devotion, not the ghee, the oil, or sincerity that catches the fire and makes us grow, and trying to offer our intention, our prayer, our presence, our love to Yashoda Damodar. You can think, of course, again, Radha Damodar is not in the picture. It's in between the lines, but it's there. And we can offer ourselves in a way, in a loving way, such that at one point we will tie the absolute by the rope on the strength of our love. So we will do that now. I will put pause here. Sri Sri Yashoda Damodar Ki Jai, Radha Damodar Ki Jai, Kartik Bhrata Ki Jai, Sri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Bol.